The next UN Climate Change Conference, COP26, begins in just under a week. The event will see governments come together to discuss how they will collectively tackle the global climate crisis. We saw the last major UN climate conference in Paris in 2015 succeed largely because China, America and Australia agreed targets in advance. However, the largest emitters of fossil fuels have shown hesitancy in attending. Aisha Janif has more.
As world leaders, diplomats and experts head to the conference in Glasgow, understanding the role and impact of major emitters has never been more important. In 2006, China became the world's largest emitter of carbon dioxide. Experts are anticipating that the nation will be under intense scrutiny at the COP26 Global Climate Summit. China's President Xi Jinping has said that the country will aim for its emissions to reach their highest point before 2030 and for carbon neutrality to be achieved by 2060. However, the country has remained tight-lipped on how that goal will be achieved, and it's expected the president will stay in Beijing for the COP26 summit, with many Pacific nations calling out the country to do more as they stand on the climate change front line. Now, Mr. Lavetanalagisuru, you're the climate change officer for the Pacific Islands Climate Action Network and also the coordinator for the Alliance for Future Generations Fiji. What does it mean for climate change negotiations when powerhouses like China are absent from the summit?
The absence of these big powerhouses just goes to show lack of seriousness about a crisis that's already grappling countries, economies and ecosystems. Especially here in the Pacific, we are at the forefront, experiencing the worst consequences. Pacific delegates who are trying so hard, despite the many logistical challenges and, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic, to get to Glasgow so that they can attend and have their voices be heard. It's a fight that we cannot at all costs lose, because it's a fight for the survival of our people, for our future generations. We are hoping that these countries will take some seriousness about the negotiations and understand that the Pacific wants to see bold and urgent leadership from these big developed countries, including, you know, the US, Australia and China and others.
Speaking of Australia, the country is a large producer of coal and gas and has been under pressure to commit to stronger climate change action targets, however has remained hesitant. Recently, the federal government announced their current position on net zero, which will preferably be reached by 2050. Now, Mr. Suru, what are the impacts of Australia's climate change commitments on the Pacific and in Fiji in particular?
We are going to experience more climate-induced disasters in the Pacific. And so this is why it's crucial for Australia to ramp up its climate ambition. What we're saying from the Pacific is we do not have another 20 to 30 years aiming for, you know, 2050. You know, by that time, some of our islands will be already underwater. The love for coal and fossil fuel, while it has, you know, its economic benefit, in the longer term, it's not sustainable for our planet. It's not sustainable for Pacific Island communities. We've been, you know, sounding this call. Our leaders have been sounding this call. The people have been sounding this call, but it's been, you know, falling on deaf ears.
Just pivoting a little, COP26 comes as alarm over the Earth's climate reaches a new high. The summit is the first time since the Paris Agreement that countries are revisiting their voluntary commitments under the accord. What do the people of the Pacific hope will come out of the summit?
We've seen the IPCC come out with the report basically saying that this is, you know, the red alert for the global world in terms of the kind of shifts that we're going to experience when it comes to climate-induced disasters and sea level rise, etc. So it's clear that we need to rein in on our carbon emissions. The other thing we want to also see is that the developed countries who have pledged deliver on their finance promises. We want to see the operationalization of the Santiago Network on loss and damage that will deliver on-ground action and support for developing countries who are suffering climate losses and damages. But also we want to see the establishment of a separate finance mechanism that's not linked to adaptation, because a loss and damage is beyond what adaptation can do. We also want to see that COP is very much inclusive and intergenerational and intersectional, and it's safely negotiated. and that the Pacific voices and delegates are heard, you know, realizing a sort of socially and gender just, equitable, but also human rights compliant and nature positive, sustainable transformation of the global society. And that's one of some of the things that we hope to see come out of COP26.
Now, Mr. Saru, as the Pacific remains on the front line, what are the implications on the Pacific if governments don't commit to targets, strategies and financial aid at COP26 that are being requested?
We will continue to see suffering Pacific communities in many ways, from violence to discrimination to, you know, accessibility to services, life-saving services, including health. These are some of the things that people are missing out on. Continue to see issues related to peace and security. Hunger and poverty is already high in the Pacific, and we'll continue to see this being exacerbated. Those are some of the things that we'll continue to see over the next coming years if, you know, actions are not being taken today to address the climate crisis.
Climate Change Officer for the Pacific Islands Climate Action Network and Coordinator for the Alliance for Future Generations Fiji, Lava Tane Leji Seru, ending that report by Aisha Janif.